The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes of frank, open, honest conversation about gambling addiction and the results of going down the slippery path that I went down and so many others, unfortunately, have gone down. I thought we'd do a little pivot here today and talk about the sobering reality when you go down the road of being a compulsive gambler and start making bad decisions that lead to the government taking a keen interest in your behavior and decision-making, and then ultimately finding yourself as a defendant in a courtroom. And to discuss the results of that, I thought it'd be a good idea to bring in an old friend of mine, Justin Paperny from White Collar Advice, who advised me when I was going through my nonsense, 7 years ago, and has advised so many people from coast to coast who are now facing the reality that prison might very well be in their future. Justin, I appreciate your time, pal. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me on.
For me, it's been almost 8 years, since I got in trouble, got arrested, then went through the entire legal proceeding. And while my experience is obviously unique to me, there's a lot of commonality in what it's like for, quote unquote, white collar criminals, which are what the majority of gambling addicts are, if they get caught up in the system. Give me just a brief kind of overview for people that don't know you yet on your background and what you guys as a company do first.
I graduated USC in 1997 as a student athlete, a baseball player, began building my career as a stockbroker. Despite having a lot of success, I found myself making terrible decisions on behalf of a hedge fund manager. He was lying to investors to raise money. I found out, I turned the other way, and I doubled down and made really bad decisions, or the bad decisions continued. When I learned that I was a target of an investigation, I lied to my lawyers, I lied to the government, obstructed the investigation, didn't know anyone that had gone to prison. I didn't want to go to prison. So I was making decisions that I thought would help me, but all they did was get me closer to prison. I was sentenced to 18 months in 2008. And like you, I surrendered to a minimum security camp with a lot of regret, wishing for a do-over that do not exist, and then serving time in prison with a lot of just good guys, fearful for the future. What will you do to sustain yourself, especially in the white-collar world? Many guys have been very successful, made a lot of money, but you lose your reputation, your money, your licenses. It's like, wow, I'm starting over from scratch. So it was a humbling experience, of course, but it compelled me to work harder and to begin build something new, which is a company that advises defendants traversing every part of this really difficult process.
How long did it take you into your federal prison stint to decide to use the worst, aspect or experience in your life to not just make a career out of it, but to do some good with it? Was that like day one you walked in and said, okay, I'm a new man, I'm going to use this experience to help other people? Or was that a process?
A few months into my prison term, I was in my friend's cubicle. His name is Michael Santos. Dude served 26 straight years in prison. And I was in his cubicle showing off about the great shape that I was getting into in prison. I sounded like a total fool. And he's like, hey, dude, how much are people going to pay you to run those miles? I'm like, I don't think anyone's going to pay me. Then I began to be more aware of my environment. And I saw doctors, lawyers, executives scared to go home because of what awaited them. So that was my aha moment. And with Michael's help, I began writing a blog. That blog led to a book called Lessons from Prison. And my intentions at the time wasn't to build a national consulting practice. It was like to provide a glimpse into this foreign world of imprisonment. Tell people violence isn't the highest value here. It's boredom. If you're preparing to get sentenced, what are you doing to hold your lawyer accountable? To prepare to somehow influence a really cynical judge that you're a candidate for leniency. So it started a few months into my federal prison sentence when I wrote that first blog in 2008. And for 15 years, this is all our team has done. It hits people differently, as you likely know. I didn't get it initially. I'm like, hey, I went to USC. I'm going to figure it out. There'll be opportunities. Totally delusional. I needed that aha moment, that wake-up call for me.
Yeah, look. I if I could do it again, I never would have gone to prison. I don't think anyone ever says, prison was a good thing for them. It did straighten me out, though, and make me prioritize the important things in my life and who I was and who I wanted to be, and ultimately changing the narrative of my life. But I can tell you this, when you walk into prison as a quote-unquote white-collar felon, you are viewed differently, at least to the federal prison camp I was at. You have the far majority of people there are usually involved, or at least in my experience, in some type of drug trafficking or, you know, drug selling, even low-level street dealing, that type of thing. The majority of people do not come from a college-educated background or, you know, a mom and dad at home, the white picket fence. These are young and even middle-aged to older men who did the best they could in what was typically a bad setting, a bad background, and selling drugs, doing drugs, being violent, being in gangs was just their norm, not my norm, but their norm. And I realized very, very quickly how much of a minority I was and an outsider I was when I first walked through the doors of Lewisburg Prison. And I imagine the same for you, or no?
For sure. I think there's a stigma that accompanies the white-collar guys, and some guys can play into that stigma, namely, you're going to complain, you're going to blame your judge, you're going to blame your lawyer, the length of the sentence isn't fair. The last thing you know someone wants to hear is a white-collar dude like me complaining about an 18-month sentence when they're bunkie serving 8 or 9 years for a nonviolent drug crime. So that's why you have to understand your environment. Don't give unsolicited advice. Don't talk about how successful you were, the money you made, try to show off. Don't complain about your sentence. You want to be humble, deferential. You want to be kind and do things that you're supposed to do. Do your job. Go to programming. A lot of guys have opportunities to pay someone to do their job or do the bare minimum. And I think you stand out when you do what you're supposed to do. We shouldn't stand out. We shouldn't be rewarded for doing the bare minimum. So I never wanted to play into that stigma. I wanted to avoid problems at all costs. And probably the best piece of advice I give to people who are going to prison, do not lament or complain about the length of your sentence. Do not form friendships with staff. They work there. You do not. They're paid to warehouse you. And most guys get it. Some don't. And problems follow. Quickly, I'll share a story in 15 seconds. Someone reached out because their husband got into trouble forming a friendship with a guard. They thought they had a connection over basketball. The inmate offers his Clipper seats to the guard. And I'm thinking, the Clippers? He thought he was friends with the guard. Now they may charge him for bribing an officer. These people are not your friends.
No, they're not. And the far majority of people I met were not good people either and got great joy out of busting, you know, people's balls left and right. They kind of have this God complex in there. I can tell you that a lot of the white collar guys I was away with made all those classic mistakes, acted holier than thou, thought they were better than not just the fellow prisoners, but the guards themselves. You had made more money, had more success. I remember, you know, I was in the RDAP program, which is a residential drug and alcohol treatment program, not specific to gambling, but it's essentially a therapy program to overcome addiction and get to the root cause of why you allowed the addiction, you know, to lead you to make bad decisions. And I actually found it very valuable. It's a 500-hour program, which takes 9 months, and it's available to all federal inmates who do have drugs, alcohol, or addiction in their pre-sentencing report. And if you successfully graduate the program, it takes, by, you know, congressional mandate, constitutional mandate, a full year off your sentence, which gets people home a lot quicker. But I remember one of the counselors who started as a CO, took like a 30-hour online course, and now is, voila, a counselor, came up to me towards the end of my bid and said, how come these other white-collar guys don't get it like you get it? Meaning, lay low, mind your own business, don't get involved in other people's stuff, and, you know, stay out of everybody's way. And I said, I can't speak for them, but maybe it's, you know, I come from humble roots. I made, you know, 12 grand a year my first year in radio. And although I'd become a quote-unquote celebrity and star, that's not where I came from. But the guy wasn't lying. I saw them go out of their way to make the time as difficult as possible for the stockbrokers, the lawyers, the doctors, who had all the advantages in the world, and still, whether it's through greed or addiction or something in between, you know, messed up and wound up in prison. The prisoners suffered no fools, and the guards got great joy out of busting the white-collar guys' butts.
What you just said is incredibly profound, because you put yourself in the shoes of a case manager or drug coordinator and said, I'm going to create a different message. So we encourage all defendants to put yourself in the shoes of your probation officer, your judge, your prosecutor, case manager in prison. They expect you to complain, to say that I want to get home, I didn't have bad intentions. So if you know how they perceive you, we encourage people to create a different path. Don't tell them, show them through the written word why you're a candidate for the program. We have a free website called prisonprofessortalent.com. It costs nothing to maintain for the prisoner, but it allows them to write and share their progress through prison. So when a skeptical case manager says, of course you want to get home. Everybody wants to get home. Why are you any different? If you were so concerned about getting home, you shouldn't have broken the law. Get out of my office. But instead, we want to build a plan and share it. And that's the only way you overcome the inevitable cynicism. You're a white-collar dude who's greedy, you take shortcuts, and you want to get in front of other people. That's not going to happen. So you've got to create, you've got to build, you've got to somehow overcome these really cynical people. Lastly, back to the drug program, you and I both know a drug coordinator could say, you don't really have a problem. You're only saying you have a problem because you want the 12 months off, right? So you need the evidence, the documentation, and commitment that you're going to get healthy. Only then is the journey going to be easier, and you're going to get more of what you want, more liberty in a quicker time.
Yeah, I would say in my experience, and look, I was blessed. I was not at a low, a medium, or a high. I was at a federal camp. Not fun, not good, nothing to glorify about it at all. You know, my life was never in danger, but, you know, the place I was at, I imagine the same for you. It's still prison, and if you want trouble, it's there for you 24/7. All you got to do is look for it and ask for it, and there's always someone willing to oblige, whether that's fighting, whether it's drugs, whether it's contraband, whether it's going to the hole, it's available for you 24/7. Let me take a quick break. Justin Paperny is with us. This is Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you. Happy to have a friend of mine. I'm happy to count him as a friend, Justin Paperny, who was with White Collar Advice and really advises and consults folks that are about to go down the path road of being incarcerated. Not just famous people, people from all walks of life who are scared to death, as we all are and were, who have family members that just want very basic questions answered. You said something to me before I went away that stuck with me the entire time I was there, and I didn't follow your advice. And grace of God, I was lucky that nothing bad happened to me. But you told me you're gonna be asked, and you're gonna want to participate in prison sports. Now, where I was, softball leagues were a huge thing, and flag football became a very big thing there as well. And I was saying to myself when I first got there, walked in the door, I am not playing softball. Justin told me it's a bad idea for two reasons. One, it's competitive and it leads to fights because guys are competitive and their pride's on the line. And then number two, God forbid you get hurt, it's worse than third world nation healthcare. Now, I got you in the back of my mind. And I'm like, dude, I can play softball. I'll just keep my mouth shut. What's possibly going to happen to me, right? And I don't think I've ever told this story publicly, but I walk into prison, okay? And about 20 minutes after I've had my rectum checked for contraband, I've been told that I was the first round draft pick of the campus New York Yankees, all right? And I go, what does that mean? They go, that means everyone knows who you are. Everyone knows you're coming here. You're playing softball for the Yankees. Now, I wanted to be a go-along, get-along guy. And I was like, well, I don't really want to play softball. They're like, look, you just got to go and do a little practice so we can see you play. So I'm like, all right, Justin told me not to do this. But I don't want to say no is the first thing I do when I walk into prison because I don't know who these guys are. I don't know if they mean me harm or good, right? So 20 minutes after I've had my rectum checked for contraband, as I walk in, I'm standing at third base of the most well-manicured softball field you've probably ever seen or contemplated in the prison system. I've got Oakley sunglasses on, a Mizuno glove on my hand, and Under Armour cleats on. And I've got 100 guys watching me take infield practice and batting practice. And I'm like, Justin's not going to be happy about this. Now, I'll get to the end of the story in a second, but I want you to interject here. What was the biggest reason why you told me, and I'm sure you counsel other people, not to get involved in prison intramurals?
if you get hurt, as you said, you will never be the same. And ACL tears, broken ankles and legs on the track or softball field or pickleball, my God, you will never be the same. And in these camps, as you know, it's not like medical's running over to take care of you. You can lay there for 3 hours before a doctor or someone comes over to take care of you.
I saw a guy compound fracture of his ankle because there were divots in the field. It's not, you know, Yankee Stadium, obviously. And he cracked the ankle, compound fracture, bone sticking out. They made him lay there for 2.5 hours before somebody came to get him. That is a true story.
You just summed it up, and that poor guy may never walk the same. So that's number one. Number two, and this has upset some people because they're like, dude, relax, enjoy yourself in prison. I had a new business I had to build. I had restitution I had to pay. It took me 10 years to do so. I had to get it together. I was in prison. I hurt people. So when you become beholden to softball or baseball, it could be 3 or 4 days a week. So besides the fact that you can get hurt, when you're practicing 3 or 4 days a week, I don't think, unless you're going to be a professional softball player, you should be doing that. You should be preparing for the hardest part. If you're a doctor, if you're a lawyer, if you're an executive and you're rebuilding, my God, use that time productively every single second instead of the softball 4 days a week. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't exercise. It should be a couple of hours and dosages you can maintain when you come home, but 4 or 5 days a week is too much. And it can lead to gambling and issues and problems. We talked about gambling a little bit earlier. I got a phone call from a very nice wife the day after the Super Bowl that said, my husband's calling me from the camp. Is it normal that he's asking me to Venmo $180, $200 to 8 or 9 people? The answer is no. He lost money. Now he's making it harder for his wife while he's in prison. Now he's covering his gambling debts because apparently he bet big on the, as she said, a Taylor Swift, a Kelce win. It didn't happen. She's a basket case. So it's just making good decisions while you're on the inside and try not to make it harder on those that love and support you, namely your children and family who suffer while you're away.
Yeah, gambling is rampant in prison, and I had to say no 500 times. Guys didn't care that I had a gambling problem. You know, I was the sports guy. They wanted my advice. Guys wanted me to help them, you know, create their parlay cards and all that. And it was really, you know, I got fortunate that there was I don't want to give too much away about the guy, but there was a mob leader in the place I was at. And he knew my story. And eventually he told the guys on the campus, that dude doesn't gamble. Stop asking him. And only because that guy stepped in and told everyone else to stop asking me, did they stop asking me. And I was fortunate enough that that guy, you know, looked out for me in that regard and recognized that I was suffering from an addiction, and being involved in that world was a no-no for me. But without that guy, they would have asked me every day for my entire bid there. So they then asked me, after, you know, trying out for softball, if I will umpire the biggest game of the year, which is one unit versus another unit. You would advise me to say no, correct?
That's even worse. And now, like, you're never going to make anyone happy. That's terrible.
So I said no. I said no again. And then I said yes to umpiring third base because I figured what could possibly happen at third base. So I made two calls. They were the right calls, but they both went against my unit. Okay? So now I'm in a bad place because the unit's pissed off at me. My unit loses the game. I made two calls that led to them losing the game, and I'm in trouble now. I mean, catcalled. I mean, cursed at. I walk into the unit. There's a legitimate street gangster in the unit, 6'7" guy, teardrop tattoo, the whole bit. And he says to me, you're in trouble. Do you need my protection? And I go, I appreciate it, but no, I'm not going down that road because I've seen enough movies. I think I know what protection means, and I want no part of it. He goes, all right, well, they're going to be coming for you, so just be ready, and let me know if you need my help. So in prison, if you're going to get in a fight and it's planned, those fights typically take place in the bathroom because there's no cameras in there. I'm going to shorten the story up. I walk into the bathroom prepared to fight. And by no means am I a tough guy or a fighter, although I grew up boxing with my dad and brother a bit. I'm not a boxer. I'm not a real fighter. But I figure I got to go in because they're coming for me. I walk in. There's two guys in the bathroom, and I know I'm going to get my ass kicked right now. So in my head, I'm like, punch the first guy and then take the beating. And as I walked in, I'm sweating. I'm nervous because, you know, this is every guy's fear. you're in prison for the first time, and I've only been there for about 3 weeks, a month at that point. When I walked in, they hugged me, and it was a test. And the test was, I didn't go to the guards. I didn't ask the gangster for help. I showed up like a man. And because I did that, I never had a single problem in that prison for the year I was there.
Well, what you did, you said you had the right response. I saw some of that in the kitchen in prison when some guys would take a utensil or two out and the guard would call that another prisoner aside and say, did you see it? And of course, the answer is, no, I didn't see anything. The irony is some guys go to prison because they have turned the other way while bad conduct was going on. And then I tell people, continue to do that in prison. You didn't see anything. You didn't hear anything. Don't say anything to the staff. Right. It's an interesting environment. I will say, you talk about, you know, temptation. So many good people are in prison because they gave into temptation, right? A bad deal, an insider trading tip, some bad decision. It's the same things can happen on the inside. So it's understanding some of those tendencies that led you there. And at least for me, wanting to use the experience to say, I ain't never going back. I want to use the time productively. These are some great stories you're sharing. You need to do more of these, your time in prison.
Yeah, I don't talk about it much publicly. That's the first time I've ever shared that particular story, you know, publicly. And I'm happy to do it with you because, you know, you're a big part of my planning for prison. One of the toughest things for me is life once you've been released from prison, but you're still in the system. And later in my life, at some point, I will address very specifically certain people and certain aspects of life upon release, you know, going from one halfway house in Brooklyn to another one in Newark, New Jersey, dealing with those folks that, you know, have won a privatized contract to run halfway houses, you know, being on probation for 3 years, restitution and all that. But one of the most disheartening things for me, and I hope you can elaborate on this, and what people need to understand, life doesn't just get better because you want it to get better the day you're released from prison. In a lot of ways, it gets harder. And it's been very hard for me on a personal level dealing with that reality that the system is not built for you to return to a good life. It's not built for you to have success post-prison. The system is meant, in my experience, to continually beat you down, to remind you of the worst mistakes you've made in life, not to be glad that you've corrected those mistakes or made good on all your promises and changed how you lived your life and make your victims whole. The system, in my experience, is built to keep you down. And I wonder if you could just elaborate on that for a minute or two.
There's no doubt it's a lifelong consequence. So prison can be easier because it's clearly defined, the beginning and an end. But to your point, coming home, going to the halfway house, more scrutiny, perhaps they don't approve your job, you're picking up trash. Here in Los Angeles, you may be working at KFC, and a lot of guys are like, well, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, I'm a business guy. You want me picking up trash or scrubbing toilets? Yes, and if people don't prepare properly for the hardest part coming home, the journey is going to be harder, which is why so many people in the halfway house, when their job don't get approved, they're like, damn, I want to go back to the minimum security camp to finish my sentence. So there are things I encourage defendants, I think as you did well, we focus on what we can and cannot control. We can't control staff in prison or the fact that as a convicted felon, there are so many things we can't do. But all we can do is focus on how we rebuild, how we create, how we grow our network, educate ourselves, and truly demonstrate why we're a candidate, for why we've earned a second chance rather than asking for. But there is no doubt the system is designed to return you. Corrections is a big business in this country, employing tens of thousands of people, and without proper preparation, I tell people, don't let this be a life sentence, right? So people will join our community. They'll call me. They'll say, well, how long have you been home? 8 years. I'll be like, wow, you served 6 months at Fort Dix Camp 8 years ago. Now, 8 years later, you're miserable and you're, no bank will hire me. I can't get a job. It's my license. It's not fair. 8 years later, they're suffering. The only way to overcome that is by building a new record, sharing it with your network. And lastly, I'll say, you don't need a million people in your network. You need a few people to stand alongside you to believe. No handouts. Earn it. Just a few people. And day by day, like the tortoise and the hare, incremental, slowly and steadily, you get back, maybe never to the level we once were. I'm not that broker at Bear Stearns in Century City making massive amounts of money. It was obscene. but I have found happiness in so many other ways. Like you, I live a balanced life. I try to be a good husband, father, manage my health, all things I didn't do when I was a young executive in this frenetic pace of build, build, make money. So it also provides opportunities to recalibrate and to reprioritize your values. And I hope people going through this system find meaning through it as you and I did. It's possible, though it's not always easy in a very hopeless, negative environment.
Yeah, the experience probably saved my life. I have to own that and accept that, and I do. And I've come to terms with who I am, and I know that there are people that will only see me as a felon or a compulsive gambler, and I'm at peace with that because I know who my friends are. I know the people in my corner, and I would say this. I have far less when it comes to material things, far less financially than I had at the time I got in trouble, but there's no doubt I'm happier. There's no doubt my life is far more rewarding and fulfilling. Now, for me, that's not just the incarceration part. It's, you know, recovery and beating an addiction and having not gambled at all for 7 years and being able to help other people and counsel young people and their families who have gambling issues. And I get great joy and satisfaction out of that. But people really, I don't care how many movies you watched, people have really no idea how inhumane the prison system is and how it doesn't just get better for you because you're no longer behind bars or in a camp. It's a journey and a long one. And I appreciate you and what you do every day of the week for people, not just famous people or people of means, but you've dedicated your life to use your story to pay it forward and try to ease the burden of the unknown for people about to go into the system for the first time. Proud to call you a friend and look forward to talking with you much more in the future. Thank you.
I'm proud to call you a friend too, Craig. Thank you.
Justin Paperny, everybody. And before we hang up with you, Justin, where could people go check you out if they're in a similar position that I was 7 years ago and you were almost 15 years ago?
Two spots, whitecollaradvice.com and on YouTube under White Collar Advice. We give away tons of free content to help people prepare for this really difficult experience.
That's Justin Paperny. You can Google him. He's been involved in a lot of high-profile defendants and cases you've never heard of as well. And just a very, very good man who messed up many years ago and has used that story to improve his life and become a better person. And I love having him on. Joe Beningo's up next. Thank you for listening to Hello. My name is Craig.